You've heard the headlines. Get some perspective now with Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Hey, good morning to you and a happy Wednesday already. We're going to jump right into the show with, well, I'd call it a concerning overreach.
The Lead. Brought to you by Burge Ford off the US 60 and Mesa Drive.
What kind of overreach? Well, how comfortable would you be with the state managing a massive DNA database? Well, that's what would have happened if State Senator David Livingston had his way. He introduced a bill that would require a ton of people to have their DNA given to the state in order to volunteer at their kid's school or to be a foster parent. Pretty much, if you had to get a fingerprint clearance, you'd also have to pay $250 to submit the biological sample. As expected, ton of outrage. He's now pared down that bill.
Welcome back, Pamela.
Ah, it's good to be back, my bud.
Yeah, and as we originally heard this yesterday, I think it was more concerning. I'm not going to say that I'm happy about it now, but I can at least understand it. And my original thought was this idea of a statewide database.
DNA database.
DNA database, yeah. Of anyone who basically has to be licensed by or regulated by the state. And we're talking about, it's nearly 700,000 people in the state of Arizona.
You're talking about anybody who needs some sort of fingerprint clearance. So it's not just even the licensing, but like if I were going to go to my daughter's school, they've got a program called Masterclass Art School, where a parent comes in and teaches.
Like a volunteer.
Yeah,
almost.
Oh, total volunteer. Yeah. But in order to be in front of a classroom and alone with students, you have to have a fingerprint clearance. Girl Scout leaders, things along those lines.
I can one-up you on that. Oh. Nail technicians.
Well, you know, some are a little dodgy.
Well,
right?
But I'm just saying. I mean, think about all the different people. I actually got a Facebook message from a woman who said she is a she does mortgage loans.
Uh-huh.
And she has to give fingerprints to the registry because anyone that processes home equity loans has to be registered. So we're not just talking about, well, these people seem a little dodgy. It's a large group of people originally that were all going to not only have to submit DNA, but then pay for the pleasure to have it kept. It was supposed to be $250.
Yeah, okay, well, I'm not even diving into the $250 quite yet. I'm still at the, you want me to do what?
You haven't even gotten the dollar figure isn't even your issue.
Exactly, because like, I'm not even opening up my checkbook quite yet.
$250 isn't my thing.
No. I'm still at the, you want the state, Arizona, to be one of the first states to maintain this massive statewide DNA database? You want to talk about government overreach? Are you kidding me?
It is Big Brother at its finest.
It's so much so, because, okay, yeah, you got to give a fingerprint, which is unique to you, and that goes into a database and everything. I don't got a problem with that.
Okay.
But when we come to all of these privacy concerns, especially with your DNA, we've talked about it so much, Bruce, especially ahead of the holidays, with Ancestry.com, 23andMe, all of these companies that people, swab their cheeks and they go and they find out that they're 90% Italian. You're like, you didn't know that already? Come on, you knew that. But where does that information go? How
is it being used?
And, well, we know that it's been used with, like, the Golden State Killer.
Yeah, who has access to all of this DNA information?
And while I think we're all kind of happy that they were able to find out who the Golden State Killer was and they got it through DNA, let's not lose the fact that through DNA they also arrested a man wrongfully for those killings.
Right. So count me as one of these people, and I realize it may not be a popular opinion, as if I care, that for the one person they catch because of this is not worth the hundreds of millions that have to give up their privacy for that. That is not a balance I'm willing to strike.
Neither am I. And you and I both have talked about technology, right? And how technology can be used for good and it can also be used for evil. And in this sense, you're giving your DNA. And, okay, yeah, so they want to make sure that, you know, you're not a criminal. I think we all could be okay with that, with the fingerprint clearance. But then where does that information go? How is it used? Could your employer get their hands on it where they wouldn't be able to offer you or they refuse to offer you health insurance because you've got some sort of genetic marker?
Well, I was going to say, we don't have the imagination yet to come up with all the ways it may be used. Do you see what I'm saying? But once it's in there, you're at the mercy of the technology or the imagination of someone else on how it might be used.
But once people got word of what State Senator David Livingston was trying to do, Well, there's a bit of a backlash. And when you get backlash, you also get amendments and a little bit of editing. And that is what has happened to this DNA bill.
The bill originally called for DNA from a wide variety of professionals, including school employees. But according to the Arizona Republic, it's been scaled back just to people who care for patients with intellectual disabilities in care facilities like Hacienda Healthcare.
Okay, now it's all making more sense. So this bill was originally a reaction to the Hacienda Healthcare, what do we call that?
Tragedy,
rape, sexual assault,
crime.
And the author of it started really broad when the reality was we just want to get information from the healthcare workers working with our most vulnerable patients, those with incapacitated intellectual disabilities,
yeah.
A variety of reasons. So now we've gotten down to, we started with roughly the 700,000 people who have to submit to one of these things on a regular basis with the state, down to probably about 150 people.
Yeah, so right now it has been amended. That would require DNA only from professionals who care for patients with intellectual disabilities in intermediate care facilities. Wow.
What a shock.
Why would we want to do that?
Right.
Yes, Hacienda Healthcare, the crime that was committed there. The idea being that if the DNA of the alleged nurse there, Nathan Sutherland, if they would have had his DNA, then they would have been able to
figure
this out
caught him
faster.
Quicker.
But, yeah,
and,
but
and again, keep
anything.
In mind, this is also it doesn't stop someone from committing a crime.
Yeah.
And criminals will commit crimes. You know, this is arguing that the chalk outline around the body is going to stop murders.
Okay, well, they also wanted to get DNA samples from people who have died.
Literally. Okay, so, and I don't know, this makes me kind of queasy, I don't know, just because every time we're talking about dead bodies. But any...
You get a little nauseous?
Any body, any deceased person who the medical examiner comes into contact with, they would take DNA samples from.
Now, the reason being that you might be able to solve some cold cases, or if, you know, they could run that through the database and see if there were any hits for past crimes. And you know what? Like, I'll be honest, that one doesn't bother me so much. That one doesn't bother me so much because once somebody is dead, it's not like somebody's going, like an employer is going to be offering them health insurance, and then privacy becomes a big issue.
But again, using the same kind of argument that, yes, they are dead. It may not be them specifically, but this, how is this DNA going to be used in the future? How many different ways can it be used as you create this map of the United States, this DNA map? Where every single person is connected in some way, shape, or form for the purpose of forensically going back and arresting people?
Yeah, exactly. Well, right now, though, I mean, happening right now, there is a public hearing on this bill, Senate Bill 1475, and it's in the Transportation and Public Safety Committee. So they're going to be taking a look at the proposed amendment as well as the bill itself. It's got to pass that committee in order to advance to the full Senate. So we want to hear from you guys. As they're down at the Capitol having this conversation in this committee, let them hear from you. Do you think this is a good idea? Is this government overreach? Or are there jobs where this would be a good idea? 602-200-2733. That is our open mic line. We want to hear from you. You might not be able to make it down to that like public hearing, but they can hear you here on KTAR. So is this a good idea, bad idea? And are there any jobs where you could see this being of benefit? 602-200-2733. It's our open mic line, and it's brought to you by Carol Royce with Keller Williams Realty East Valley.
Yeah, so we've heard a lot about the don't text while driving, distracted driving, the different laws that people are trying to come up with. We have some public opinion polling that I'm just going to tell you, a lot of you are not being honest with yourselves, okay?
What?
All right? Denial is more than a river in Egypt. We are going to talk about the new polling data on the distracted driver, the texting while driving laws.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
So anytime you see kind of polling data out there, especially about, I use the term public policy events, legislation, you know, you get this 53% for, you know, you get 56 maybe. You're starting to get near 60%. You're like, oh, my God, it's a landslide,
yeah.
Right? So our friends over at High Ground, right, put together a poll. High Ground Polling Consulting did a poll in which they asked, in general, okay, so you can answer this poll at home right now. You ready?
Okay.
You guys can play along. In general, do you believe people should be able to text while driving? Now, granted, I think the way that this question is worded is similar to the idea of, do you think there should be air? So, you know, I mean, I it's leading to say the least. It is. I think obvious on a certain level, but the numbers were amazing.
Well, okay, but how about you and I do this? So we get the phone call,
yeah,
and we're asked, in general, Bruce.
In general.
Do you believe people should be able to text while driving?
Of course you say no.
Right. I would say no, too.
Yeah. And all of you said no. You know why I know that? Because the polling data came back and found out that 96.1% of you said no. 96.1% of you said no. People should not be able to text while driving. Here is where I'm going to call you all a bunch of hypocrites.
Uh-oh.
Including myself.
Uh-oh. Ooh.
I don't think you should be texting and driving, but you know what? If I need to pick my phone up, it's an emergency. It was my mom. I had to do this. What about the kid at school? I had to check this and the other. I was doing my navigation app. You're okay doing it. You are in control. You know how to do this. Those people over there, that guy can't stay in his lane. That person almost hit me. They're sleeping through the light because they're playing it there. Those people shouldn't be texting while driving. You obviously are.
Okay. Yeah, I think we all fall into that category. But have you had a close call?
Oh, yeah.
Did that impact you at all for, like, the next couple of miles, at least?
Oh, I don't know about that.
For me, it does.
I can shrug things off pretty quick.
No. I can attest to that, folks. But for me, like, I've had some incidents where I'm like, whoa, wow, yeah, that was dumb, Pamela. Put the dang phone down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it has impacted me. And I don't play with the phone. I call it play with the phone. But I don't play with the phone when my daughter's with me. Which I know that sounds super weird. Like,
but
it's okay when I'm by myself, but not when she's in the car because I'm concerned about her and not myself and others on the road.
I'm not.
It is hypocritical.
I'm not trying to make the argument for texting and driving. Okay? So I was driving. I don't even know what day it is anymore.
It's Wednesday.
Monday.
Right now. Okay.
Monday I was driving.
2 days ago.
And I'm coming back. I'm at a heightened state of awareness on the 93, the deadliest freeway in Arizona.
Okay.
Between Kingman and Wickenburg.
Sure.
And it has those signs, and they remind you, and I try to do it, daylight. We had snow flurries at one point, rain at others, and it's, you know, daytime, turn your headlights on.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I saw the sign, you know, it reminds me, hey, daytime headlight area or something like that. And I apologize if I'm paraphrasing it. And I was like, ooh, I need to remember if my headlights are on, right? I'm driving the monster truck. I'm driving along. And so I have to reach over on the left, and I'm trying to flip the little dial to make sure the headlights are on. And I veer off the side of the road. I get on the rumble strips,
whoa,
and I get all the way over the side. I'm like, whoops, okay. Good. Now, I was distracted. I was distracted for just a couple of seconds while I played with the headlight knob. Do you see what I'm saying? That distraction comes in a variety of ways. I will admit that I was, for that moment, a bad driver. I almost drove off the darn freeway. I might have been doing 70. But the point being is distraction can find itself in a lot of different ways.
Yes, absolutely. It can be distracting when you're trying to turn the lights on. It's distracting if you're playing with the radio. It's distracting when the kids are in the back seat. But there has been so much research about playing with your phone, whether you're talking on it, whether you're navigating, whether you're texting, whether you're reading something.
Yeah.
And how far you go, the length that you go without your eyes on the road. Listen, you're not kicking the kids out of the back seat. You're not yanking the radio out of
the
car.
Thank you for not yanking the radio.
Yes, appreciate that. And thanks for tuning into KTAR.
Shout out to those of you listening to the radio. I hope we're not too distracting right now.
And you know what? And you got to turn the headlights on so that somebody doesn't hit you coming the other way. Like, you can make an argument for all three of those things. But texting while driving, you can't. So I want to ask folks, because I fall into this category as well, and Bruce just admitted to it as well. If you're against texting while driving, why do you still do it?
Why do you do it?
602-200-2733. If you're against texting while driving, 96% of us are, then why do we still do it? 602-200-2733. We'll be playing some of those calls back from the open mic line later.
96% of you think it's wrong to text while driving. 95.9% of you do it.
I got to chew on that one.
Can't have it both ways. Oh,
it's too easy to do. I think that's one of the reasons. It's just too easy.
It is easy. And it is. My worry is the genie's out of the bottle.
Yeah, I'm with you, man.
Toothpaste is out of the tube. Horses left the barn!
Wow, can we move on, please?
Okay, let's move on. The sales tax hike. A sales tax hike for schools. A ballot initiative? Here's why it might actually be coming to fruition. We'll tell you about that next.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
I'm not nearly as knowledgeable enough about this song as I should be, like the background of it and stuff. I know it's a classic.
It is a classic.
When we talk about education in the state of Arizona, I don't know if this is a positive or a negative song about it. I haven't quite figured out, like, is this a good thing or are we being a little too snarky right now? Because we are talking about education in the state of Arizona, hot button topic, pretty much constantly. And with the way things have been going, I would expect it to remain so.
Absolutely. I mean, we had a massive teacher walkout in April of last year. So we're coming up on that 1 year anniversary of Red for Ed. And after Red for Ed and teachers getting the 20 by 2020, thanks to Governor Ducey.
You're welcome.
Then came the Invest in Ed. This was the bill that would have taxed the wealthy in Arizona.
This was the Tax the Rich initiative. It was going to go on the ballot, and if it were passed, that there would be a special tax for the 1%. I know it wasn't exactly that. And that money would go specifically to education.
Now, we almost had the opportunity to vote on that. Almost.
Didn't get to the ballot.
No, because of two state Supreme Court votes and the way that the language in it. And there were some technicalities as to why we didn't have the opportunity to vote on Invest in Ed and tax Arizona's richest to pay for public education. Mm. But because that got really close.
It got close. It went to the state Supreme Court.
It got really close to the point where we were going to be able to vote on that. But just in the nick of time, according to some, we didn't have the opportunity to.
All right.
And because we didn't have the opportunity to, and because we almost had the chance to vote on a tax increase, you're seeing some movement down at the state capitol. You're starting to see some unlikely parties kick around the idea of increasing the sales tax in order to help pay for public education.
This gets into, there is a fundamental issue, and I would only ask people to be consistent on it. If you want insert excess spending here for insert whatever project you think is important, education, roads, we'll go on a grander scale, the military, whatever you think, and you're unwilling to pay a penny more, you are a hypocrite. You are inconsistent. So if you believe that education is underfunded and the state of Arizona needs to spend more money on it, don't expect politicians to take money from their pet project, the thing they think got them reelected, the thing that is their hot button issue, because obviously education isn't for all of them. You need to be willing to pay more. And if you're not willing to pay more, then I'm not willing to support your argument.
Well, I am willing to pay more. And I do support a tax increase for public education in the state of Arizona because it has been absolutely decimated in the last decade.
But I will argue that at least you're consistent in the standpoint of you don't think it should just be a tax on the rich.
Oh, no.
A sales tax
would
be everyone that participates in the economy.
Yes, I would have voted no on the investment in education.
So would I.
Because I don't believe it is the rich's responsibility, the wealthy's responsibility to support and pay for public education in the state of Arizona. We all benefit from it.
Yeah.
We all should feel the pain. So while I would have voted against invest in ed, I would vote for an increase in the sales tax. So here's what we're looking at right now. We have three Republicans that are leading this charge. Did you hear me on that, folks? Three Republicans down at the state capitol are leading the charge in raising the sales tax in the state. It would go from the current 0.06% to a full penny. Okay.
All right. Four-tenths of a cent increase.
All right, Pamela.
I'm no math whiz.
Well,
but
no kidding. Oh, okay, but they're going to make all this money, and who says any of it is going to go to education,
it's been a problem
right?
In the past.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? They've kind of worked out an agreement on that as well.
All right.
Under this plan, 75% of the money would go to K through 12. All right. So it would go to public education and it would give a little bit of freedom to the school boards in order to determine how that money should be spent. So you kind of have local control at that point.
All right.
Okay. Because what they need in Gilbert could be very different than what they need in Surprise, which could be very different than what they need in Peoria, which could be very different than what they need in Chandler. You know what I mean? It would give school boards the flexibility to determine the best way that their district needs to spend that money. Another 20% would go towards universities, which universities have taken a huge hit in the last couple of years with less and less state money going to public education in the state universities, which has also led to increased tuition prices.
Hmm.
And then 5% would go to community and tribal colleges. So this increase, they've already worked out an agreement as to how the money should be divvied up.
I'm still skeptical, but go ahead.
No, I get the skepticism. But
because
I mean,
they always tend
to
go back and be able to change things around when nobody's watching. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, that and that's where we have to watch.
I agree.
And if this
is important to you, then you have to not let them play by hook and by crook. But one of the things we're finding is that maybe, first off, this is, again, my skepticism showing that the reason the Republicans are trying to do this is because they're trying to keep the tax the rich off the ballot.
That's exactly what it is.
So if they if we pass this and get this through and everybody pays for it, then you can't go back and say we need to pass the Invest in Ed because we've already done something about it.
I think the fact that the Invest in Ed got so close to being voted on,
they're not in favor of more taxes.
No.
They're not in favor of more taxes for the rich,
which could put the governor in a very difficult position.
Ooh.
Because Governor Doug Ducey in his State of the State has always said, you know, we're not going to raise any taxes. In fact, he calls them fees and that we're not going to do this. And even in years past, you know, Democrats have kind of, you know, not been so willing to raise taxes. But Invest in Ed, I think, scared
them.
Very
few people that win elections based on raising taxes.
And I like the fact that the money, there's an agreement as to how it should be divvied up. And there is a chance, we're going to keep watching this for you right here on KTAR, but there is a chance that in 2020, Arizona taxpayer voter, will have the opportunity to vote as to whether or not a sales tax hike would go for schools. Give us a call on the open mic line. Let us know if you'd be down for that. What are your thoughts on that? 602-200-2733. Would you support a sales tax hike to support education? 602-200-2733.
So Pamela is not attached to the television. Good for her. All right. Doesn't spend a ton of times watching TV. You know who does? Babies.
Bibis?
Under the age of two, apparently now watch more TV than Pamela. We'll tell you about that coming up next.
Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes. KTAR News on 92.3 FM.
When you were growing up, did you have a TV in your room when you were growing up?
About 14. 14, 15 years old.
I had one probably earlier than that.
Yeah.
I want to say my first one was a black and white TV, though.
Mine, too, that they gave me from my grandparents.
But it was like the hand-me-down TV that nobody else in the house wanted because...
And you were desperate enough to take it.
I was like, I can
get up and change the channels.
But I'm also, only because I'm an OG when it comes to this, I had like Atari...
I remember Atari.
And so I needed a television so I could play my little video games in my room. So I was playing video games as a little maggot. But we're finding now, as I do not remember my Pamela, I barely remember lunch yesterday. I blame it on the head injuries. But I certainly don't remember what it was like being an infant. But I feel pretty confident, only understanding the times, that rarely, if ever, did my mom sit me in front of a television. There were no iPads back then. Stevie Z, when I grew up as a baby, there were no iPads. I'm just throwing it out there. I didn't know if you knew that. There were no cell phones. Steve,
okay,
did you realize that we didn't
have
cell phones back then when I was a baby?
He gets the point.
So there was no opportunity for the screen to be my babysitter.
Unless your mom plunked you down in front of the television screen.
In front of the Curtis Mathis. In the
piece
big
of
wooden oh my god, it took teamsters to bring it into the house. They had to take a wall out, bring the TV in, put the wall back in.
How times have changed, Bruce. We've got some new study that's coming in from the Journal of American Medical Association, and they're taking a look at some babies out there, the little ones from 0 to 2 years old.
0 to 2.
And how much screen time are they getting? Well, the amount of screen time has doubled from 1997 to 2014. Right now, well, let's say 2014 was the last we've got the data on. Total screen time for kids 0 to 2 is now over 3 hours a day. 3 hours a day.
3 hours a day for 2 years. Is that toddler?
Yeah.
Infant, newborn, toddler. I don't know the time space continuum of all the different terminologies. They're all little babies. But under the age of two, we're spending 3 hours a day watching TV. And by watching, I mean they're sitting in front of it. There's colors. Maybe there's a puppy every once in a while.
And in 97, it was about one and a half hours a day. Okay, so it's more than doubled.
Okay.
And TV is still the time that the kids watch screens the most is in front of a television.
Okay.
But
it's the number
as
one
you have just so eloquently laid out for super producer CVZ,
there
are so many more screens out there beyond the television nowadays that I think makes it easier for kids and parents to hand kids their cell phone, their iPads.
The American Academy of Pediatrics, or AAP, says 75% of children ages 0 to 8 have access to a mobile device that most 1 and 2 year olds are using one on a daily basis.
I still find it kind of cute, I guess. Maybe it's because they're not my kids. But when I see like a little baby in a stroller and I watch mom or dad hand them the phone or hand them an iPad and you watch a kid.
I watch dollar signs go out the window because that kid's going to throw it on the floor. Bing!
I'm always amazed at how young I see kids who can manipulate the screen. Who can play on the video, who can go to the next
video.
They know how to do this at such a young age when your grandparents still are like, so how do I skip the ad again?
Yeah,
how do I do that on the YouTube?
Okay, you say it's cute, and I understand why parents do it. I did it. My goodness. Sometimes you just need to go to the bathroom in peace. So you turn on the television or you give them an iPad.
It becomes a babysitter.
To a certain degree, at times it most definitely does because you need your sanity as a parent.
Okay.
But are you doing it too often? Is it too much? I would say 3 hours a day. Yeah, that's a bit much.
Right.
And it does have an impact. It's not just, hey, you know what? What do they call it? They're digital natives. No, no, there's an impact.
Not only does it disrupt sleep, it impacts their developing brain and causes them to score lower on tests even years later. Toddlers who watch too much television may be more likely to struggle socially by middle school. And each hour of TV watching predicted an 11% risk of being bullied by sixth grade.
And I want to know how they come up with that because...
Interesting.
Then how much is appropriate? Because, I mean, come on. All parents have done it. Because you just stop crying.
Sure.
You just need to breathe. And not that it should become the end-all, be-all, but it sometimes is your sanity. So how do you balance your sanity with your kid's developmental you know, delays. It's something that, like, all parents have to kind of struggle with.
And it is easy, and it's easy and effective also.
Yeah.
Right? It works. Parents wouldn't be putting the screen in front of the crying one-year-old if it didn't work.
Right.
Yeah.
Just be careful.
Still amazed by it. What if solar panels were made mandatory? The People's Republic of California is moving in that direction.
Are we next?
How soon? We're the Sunshine Factory, for goodness sakes. We'll talk about it next.